first case in our calendar is our 95-2014 and 95-2031. Gregory L. Goldfuss, Administrator versus Gene A. Davidson. Mr. Eiler.
Good morning, everybody, and may it please the court. The court of appeals in this case here had used the wrong reasoning, indicating that willful wanton conduct was the appropriate standard of care. The court of appeals used the standard of care, which applies to undiscovered trespassers and defects or dangers in the land. The court of appeals, instead of applying the discovered trespass rule, applied the undiscovered trespass rule. And as a result of that, applied the willful and wanton standard, which was incorrect.
Doesn't the discovered trespasser rule generally refer to minors?
Safety judge, I'm sorry.
Doesn't it refer to generally as minors or young kids?
The undiscovered trespass rule, to me, Judge, there are some cases I believe it's applied to adults, but that may
be. No, the discovered trespass rule.
The discovered trespass
rule. To minors?
No, I don't think so. In the Whitten Jones versus Wittenberg case, there was no minor involved at, and that's where the student who was caught in the dormitory was then put in a police car and then he escapes, and the police officer fired twice, once into the ground. And the court in Jones versus Wittenberg, the federal second case, which we cited in our brief, indicates that when you have a discovered trespasser, as was that boy that was running, and the same thing is true in the Maple, Tennessee case, that you cannot. You must use ordinary care. It's not willful and wanton. The other cases which apply to undiscovered trespassers concern the land, like this court decided in the Alexa case. That's where the helium was stored, that the Democratic Party of Nashville Buick County, where it was. There you had a condition on the land which was dangerous, but it was undiscovered. The trespasser was undiscovered in that case. That was a minor, Your Honor, absolutely. That was on that particular case true. And in that case, the court ruled that even though the willful and wanton standard applied in that case, it did not apply if there was active negligence on the part of the landowner. Your Honor, I forgot to remark that I need to reserve 5 minutes if you would.
Watch your time there, Mr.
I recognize why you argue the negligence standard rather than willful or wanton because it's easier to show. But why would you not argue in this case even willful and wanton?
Well, the question is a question of proof. I mean, how much do I have to do? Why should I accept the burden? Why should both of us, Gregory, accept the burden? He doesn't need proof. I mean, we could have said willful or wanton. We could have voted on manslaughter, almost. Willful, wanton, manslaughter, intentional use of a deadly weapon. I mean, you're almost approaching an area where it involves almost criminality. Well, why take a burden that you don't have to do?
I thought in your brief, I read your brief as sort of arguing that also, that you said even if you apply the willful wanton test that Davidson here shot two people when they're running away from the pole barn, and that would be willful and wanton. Didn't you argue that?
I argued that on a motion for direction to dispose of the case, and what I was trying to do with the judge there was saying that the use was so inordinate, that there was such a breach of ordinary care with a discovered trespasser, that he should direct a verdict on the issue of negligence alone. And in arguing that, as we say in our brief, it wasn't that we were advocating the use of willful and wanton. I was simply indicating to the judge, I have proved more than a fortiori. I have proved more than negligence in the case. Ergo, please give us a directed verdict on the issue of liability because the judge had ruled there was no self-defense, no threat to the homeowner. The boys were running away. It was a rainy night. The boys had portrayed, the boys had done exactly what the owner said when he shouted two times, get away from the barn, and they did that.
Mr. Eiler.
Your Honor.
Your argument is starting right into the merits, but I'm wondering if you're not thereby, or are you conceding the issue on whether or not this is plain error?
No. In 15 minutes, Judge, the question was to choose.
Right.
And I chose this way. I thought by explaining
first,
but I will address the plain error doctrine.
I know your position on it is that it's admitted. But where are we procedurally? If this is not deemed to be plain error by this court, then what issues remain for us to decide?
If this court rules that plain error was inappropriately applied in the case, generally this criminal case, I have to explain to the court. But if that happens, then the defendant has failed to comply with 51, which says you will preserve your errors. In other words, never asking for willful and wanton misconduct, never objecting to the charge on negligence that the court gave, then you waive the willful and wanton argument. The only way that the willful and wanton argument survives is if you do.
Well, I mean, we're assuming that it doesn't survive, and then is there any other part of this case that remains to be decided?
Yes, the defendant, across the comments on public policy, wants to use the baseball case to say that you should have a right to shoot trespassers and return vigilantism to the society. That issue remains for this.
That's a presumption of risk issue, and that's what you
mean. It is, Judge. It's an assumption.
Primary assumption of policy.
Exactly, Your Honor. It is an assumption of risk argument. But nonetheless, Judge, the question that...
Is that the homeowner's privilege?
It is not.
How about the homeowner's privilege issue?
The homeowner's privilege is to use, I think, that the court, the Alexo case and the Wittenberg case, gives the homeowner's privilege, which means you can use reasonable force to deter or to hold a trespasser if you use ordinary care. Now, we learned from Wittenberg that it was not ordinary care, and the fire hits the ground where the blow ricocheted and killed him. Here you have a trespasser. I would say this. In the case of Tennessee versus Garrett in the United States, Justice White said as follows. It is not better that all felony suspects die than that they escape. And he's right. He's right. It's better that all trespassers don't die rather than they escape. And that's the great societal lesson. How much force do you use? What's ordinary care? And the answer is for a fleeing trespasser, Gregory. In this case, you do not shoot towards him. That's the privilege, I think. And the privilege is you can use reasonable force, but it must be with ordinary care. We can run through a whole string of scenarios. Can you fire in the air? Can you fire in the opposite direction? Can you fire in the ground? Recalling that there's no dispute that it's a deadly weapon that's being used. No question on that point. So I think, Your Honor, that what the privilege is for the homeowner, first you have to have the threat on his life. If there is no threat to him or his family, you have no right to use force. In this case, it was clear. There was no threat. The door was locked. He had called the police according to his testimony. He was safe within his home, and the two boys were running for State Route 88 away from the home. The evidence is absolutely clear. There was no threat on his life. And the trial court properly ruled that there's no self-defense.
There's a dispute. I read the Court of Appeals opinion. I wondered, and then I read your brief after I read the opinion. I wondered about this statement. The trial court also refused to give appellees, which was you, the plaintiff's proposed jury instruction, willful and wanton misconduct. Was there, you argue, of course, that doesn't make sense that the plaintiff would have offered that jury instruction. What's the status of the record on that? Was there a jury instruction?
The record is as follows, Judge, insofar as the willful and wanton case. I discussed with you how the argument went on directed verdict, and that was for me to get a directed verdict on negligence based on the facts, no danger, and so forth. But there was a packet of instructions where we submitted, stock instructions, if you will. We sent those to the court. One of those included willful and wanton. We didn't know where we were going with, how the evidence was going to unfold, what count. So nonetheless, that was submitted, but the record is absolutely clear that on the record, we never requested that the trial court, instruct the jury on willful and wanton, never. So you can have a proposed instruction, and you submit them to the judge because you want them. We gave them all of them, and we said, well, here they are. Well, we never made the request that the court charge him willful and wanton because it was unnecessary to do so.
Was there a separate proceeding at which the court would at which there would be an opportunity, I assume, for both counsel to request the judge to give proposed instruction number 9 or whatever by number?
The transcript record at page 422 to about 435 is a conference we had with the judge on jury instruction. And throughout that, it's a withdrawal discussion with the trial judge who said, let's go through the instructions, and we did. And nowhere in that setting at all, Judge, did we ever suggest to the court.
So when the appellee says in their brief that you offered jury instruction, whatever it was, number 9, which was willful and wanton, your response to that is that was your batch of jury instructions you sent to the court, and you said, these are all the jury instructions that may imply depending upon whatever the evidence shows. But
did anyone at the end of the charge object to the charge and request that Wolfe and Wanton be charged?
No.
That's your waiver argument.
That's the waiver argument, Your Honor. That's correct. First, there was no proposal of Wolfe and Wanton by the defendant. There was no objection to the negligence charge given by the court at the close of the case. Judge always, and in this case, have approached the empty tracks and stations for reasons the charge. The court, that's never said, well, the judge was much of a charge. So the waiver is extremely strong, to my view.
I know that you've got the other three matters you want to go into, but one of the reasons I voted to take this case was the issue of whether or not there really is a doctrine of plain error in civil cases. Now, I know that a couple of our cases have made reference to that, and recently we've discussed it some, but isn't that an aberration in the law? Hasn't plain error always been reserved for criminal cases?
Yes, the history of plain error has always been confined to criminal cases because of what's involved in criminal law. But it has never been applied to intrude into Rule 51. It has never taken Rule 51 and said that we have that Rule 51 and any interpretation of Rule 51 is never permitted to plain error to come in, as far as I'm concerned, except these two aberrant cases which occurred. I think there's a danger to it. I think that it's a serious matter. I think it's a ground for almost every appeal where you have failed to, not only once, but several times, to preserve your client's rights, whatever it might be. And then it also opens up the door as the two things. I don't like the case, said the court of appeals. I don't like it.
Do you find any place... Do you find any place in the civil rules that there is implicitly or explicitly a rule that comports with Criminal Rule 52?
No.
So that if we had wanted plain error in civil cases, we knew how to write it.
Thank you, Mr. Eiler. Mr. Birch.
Legitimately angry.
The difference is in the status of an individual or property, because
But that status is not, has never in the law has it been accorded for this sort of active, affirmative action by the landowner. It's always been latent or inactive, passive condition.
In the context of traditional landowner liability cases, and I submit that as one of the reasons I believe that this case is a variation on the traditional landowner invitee license and trespasser, because what we're really talking about here are issues that go beyond merely supremacy liability, because as you point out, it is active conduct on the part of the individual, but it's somewhat of a hybrid because it's active conduct on the part of the individual in the context of a homeowner who's awakened in the middle of the night by somebody.
But it's not a condition. It doesn't have anything to do with the land. It has to do with an affront.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's the emotional part. This is an affront. I'm legitimately angry that this person's in my yard, you know, or at my pool bar. So what am I privileged to do?
Your Honor, when I submit that Mr. Eiler and Mr. Eiler is correct, that his proposed jury instruction was not actually submitted to the court during the course of the discussion, but I even submit that it's accurately set forth in Mr. Eiler's own original proposed jury instructions at jury instruction number 9, subsection 7, which is if the owner has actual knowledge of the trespassers on the premises, his only duty is not to cause injury to him by willful or wanton misconduct. And that's the whole basis of our appeal. We are not suggesting that it is open season to Mr. Eiler's.
Why didn't you urge the trial court, why didn't the defense counsel urge the trial court to give that instruction to the jury then, if that's the standard? I mean, that's the waiver issue, right?
You know, I think the waiver issue here cuts both ways. I mean, if that's the correct application of the law and the trial court is applying a standard that is not the correct standard, and particularly in the context of a situation here where it gets to the issue of whether or not there was a waiver of the issue of primary assumption of the risk, these labels oftentimes, there's cases that have been cited in both briefs, and Mr. Eiler's briefs recommend this as well, that the issue of primary assumption of the risk is really not an affirmative defense. It goes to the very essence of whether there's a legal duty in the first place. And while we did not file an appeal on the basis that the trial court erred in its jury instructions, we did file an appeal on the basis that the trial court denied a summary judgment motion, denied a direct verdict motion, denied a judgment.
Well, but the jury was given an instruction that favored the plaintiff in this case and did not favor the defendant. And so that looks like a waiver when it's raised then in the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals sort of helps you out by saying, well, this looks like plain error. The plain error standard that the Court of Appeals use here isn't even the standard that's used in a criminal case. The standard there is that they say, well, it's to prevent a miscarriage of justice, but that's such a general term. Even assuming it could be applied in a civil case, which I'm not sure if Justice Douglas is, it should be, but assuming it is, the test there is that the error, without the error, the outcome of the trial likely would have been different, and nobody argues that here, and the Court of Appeals didn't even give that as the test. I guess I'm very concerned about the waiver issue. It seems to me that the defendant waived the jury instruction issue, and the Court of Appeals is wrong in its conclusion. So you have to convince me I'm wrong.
Doesn't an attorney representing his client have a duty to call that to the trial court's attention?
And with respect to the jury instruction, yes, Your Honor, that's why I think that this court is going with the idea that there was a waiver to the extent of any assigned error with respect to the incorrect jury instruction. But our assignment of error is not addressed as much to the the actual incorrect jury instruction, for which there was never an objection at that time, but is addressed to the fact that it should never have even gone to the jury on a negligence cause of action, which is the only cause of action he was asserting. So, in one sense, I'm not sure that it was really an error by the trial court to give the instruction on negligence, because that was the only cause of action that Mr. Idle was proceeding. The error, as we submit, was the error in not granting the motion for summary judgment directed for JNOV on what is, even at this stage, still being characterized as a negligence cause of action. And we submit that the law of Ohio does not recognize a negligence cause of action in this context.
Counsel, we have notice pleadings in this case. Was a motion coming both ways for directed verdict and into the evidence. Help me out, because this is what I, in this case, I think the judge should have directed a verdict against the defendant, saying this conduct is unfinding, is clearly willful, wanton, and misconduct on the part of the defendant. Verdict direct. Jury go in there and determine the level of damages. End of story. Then we wouldn't be in all this muddle about what we categorize.
Different muddle.
If I can respond to that.
We just don't want to encourage people to be poking firearms out the window and blasting away.
I could, Your Honor. First of all, even putting aside notice pleadings, as is evident from this proposed jury instruction, it wasn't just a question of no allegation of complaint of willful or wanton. It wasn't pursued, whether it was in the complaint or not, it was not pursued at trial. And every time the trial court addressed Mr. Eiler, do you want to pursue this on a willful or wanton basis for reasons that are not germane to this court, Mr. Eiler assiduously backed off of that. To the point that even on his proposed jury instruction, when the trial court himself recognized the correct standard for what a willful or wanton, he elected not to pursue this on a willful or wanton basis.
The trial judge still could do that, because the evidence is there.
I would submit that we didn't
have
a case of that, Your Honor, that what is characterized here as being willful or wanton, first of all, Mr. Eiler himself has never.
How old was your client?
I believe it was 50, Your Honor.
Okay, so what? He wasn't an old man who was...
That he changes every year as I get older.
He wasn't an old man, let me tell you. From my perspective,
but
he wasn't.
Your Honor, as far as I can remember your comment about shouldn't he be directed a verdict on willful or wanton, and I know I'm getting to the emotional side of this case, but I think that is part of this and why it wasn't appropriate to direct a verdict, is that you are awakened in the middle of the night by intruders. You are in a range form where you can't make out the syllables that well. One of them has an object in his hand, you don't know whether it's a gun, it turns out to be a crowbar, and you yell.
Is that in the record?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
I didn't see that in the record.
The crowbar?
That he was in a dark area that he...
No, Your Honor, when he first looked out the window, he was in a lit area.
Yeah,
but it was
okay.
Hard driving rain, and it was about 100 to 150 feet away, and he had an object in his hand, he couldn't make it out. He yelled. And when it's characterized as them fleeing, all he knows is that they disappear into the dark. He doesn't know whether they're coming on in the front of his house, the back of the house, in the middle of the night, his wife and son are there. And I guess I'm responding to the direct verdict.
This article, this argument about waiver is obviously one, a legal argument that ought to be considered, but it concerns me that we're even off on that direction, because would it not be true if we decided this case on waiver, that we have sub silento approved the willful and wanton standard for discovered trespassers?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that's a change in the law.
I
believe it is or isn't, because it's always been that you have to use reasonable care, even when you're, if we got willful and wanton, to hear you talk about it, if somebody's a peeping Tom, it seems to me your argument says you can see somebody peeping in your window, shoot now, and ask questions later.
No, Your Honor. I would submit that if this court does hold that to be the proper standard, I think that's a variation on the idea that this gives the homeowner a license to shoot and ask questions later. And under the willful and wanton standard, as Mr. Eiler himself said, I'm not disputing, Your Honor, that had this case been submitted to the jury on a willful and wanton standard, that a verdict could have gone either way.
Yeah, you want keep coming back to that, and I want to stay with the negligence thing for a minute, because I think the standard has always been that you have to use reasonable care for discovered trespasser. Where we're really getting ourselves in problems is these artificial, is a editorial comment, so I shouldn't say artificial, but that's what I mean. These artificial distinctions between trespasser, discovered trespasser, licensee, invitee. But just for a moment, to attack it a different way, I see you picked up your brief. Do you have it there in front of you? Because we're going to have to decide. This becomes a very major case, even if we decide it just on waiver. Look at your first propositional law. Never mind, I thought you had it with you. It's the one filed May 13th.
Oh, I did. No wonder.
Yeah, okay, I thought so.
I'm sorry, which page?
Right in your index, the first proposition of law. And let's read it word by word to see. It's on page, you know, like Roman numeral, or two small eyes. First page in your brief. Table of contents?
Yes, sir.
Okay. A homeowner does not owe a duty to exercise reasonable care for the safety of an intruder committing a felony under the discovered trespasser rule. Now, if we adopt that proposition of law, have we not forevermore said, to put it rather than in the negative, to put it in the positive, a homeowner doesn't have to exercise any duty with a discovered trespasser, or has the right to eliminate a trespasser under any circumstances?
Absolutely not, Mark. That's why I'd like to stress this is not, I would say, open season on felons coming on your property. The standard, though, is willful and wanton, and I would submit that that is a far more realistic and reasonable standard under circumstances where you have a wrongdoer who's not merely a trespasser, but is actually coming on the property intent to commit criminal conduct on the property in the middle of the night, that you're not going to be held to the same standard of reasonable care that you would be in the classic.
But aren't you saying, to not to interrupt you, Justice Douglas, but aren't you saying then it's okay to shoot such people?
No, you aren't. I'm saying that the standard as to whether it was okay to
if you aren't saying it's okay to shoot them, then didn't you confess judgment on the issue of liability? And
because,
go right to the issue of damages.
Because, Your Honor, I believe the correct standard is a higher standard than mere negligence, willful and wanton, which is, what if the gun accidentally went off? Safety was off when he was at the window and heard those people outside, and he was negligent and handling the gun went off. Is he liable there? On a negligence theory, yes. Even though the person's in the course of committing a felony.
Your light's on. I interrupted Justice Douglas. He had another question.
As long as the justice is asking a question, you continue.
State v. Childers, which was way back in 1938, where this court said, while deadly force may at times be permitted, such force is only justified when the landowner reasonably believes that it is necessary to protect his own life or the life of a third party. Here we have somebody running away from the scene, 150 feet away.
In the perception of the homeowner, that's not necessarily the case. He disappeared in the blackness, as he said. He didn't know whether he was coming around the front of his house. Where are you going?
Okay, so somebody peeping in, I want to bring it closer to the house. Somebody peeping in your window. Blast away. I mean, what would ever happen to the old rule that if you're going to shoot them outside, make sure you drag them across the threshold? Remember we used to always said that?
I don't remember that.
You don't?
Oh,
no. If I may, and go back to this waiver issue as well. It's been referred to here that the Court of Appeals was a split decision. I believe that's somewhat mistaken. The dissenting judge as well believes it was appropriate to remand this case, and he came up with a hybrid of willful and wanton and reasonable force, and I'm not sure what that would be in practice, but I think his quote is accurate from the Court of Appeals opinion at page 4 of the concurring dissent, or however you'd like to characterize it, which is, the cases in this area find that judicial standards have at times resulted in conclusions that have perplexed the bench, bar, and public, and have defied faster solutions when dealing with the balancing factors that are involved in the analysis of the subject matter. And I believe that the cases are grounds of public policy, the correct standard is one of you cannot willfully and wantonly injure it. And if this court concludes that there was, that the several justices here have decided that is exactly what he was doing, let a jury decide that. And this is not a negligence case. It never should have been tried as a negligence case. And on the basis of the negligence claim, the trial court erred in not correcting for not granting summary judgment and not giving the JLD one negligence.
Thank you, Mr. Birch. Ms. Eiler, you have about 4.5 minutes.
I have to correct some of the mistakes. There was no felony committed here. That the boys were at the pole barn and attempting to break the lock, which they did not do. At the time the time that Davidson drew his weapon, the boys were running, had obeyed the order of Davidson to get away from the barn. They were running away from the barn, away from the residence. So at that point, if Davidson had been entitled to any privilege to protect himself or his property, it was gone. At that point, they were running away. It was no longer a threat.
The council several times said that the evidence definitely showed that the people in the house didn't know where these people were. They were, so they were afraid that they were coming towards them or coming towards the house. He seemed to indicate that the evidence was clear that people in the house didn't know where these people were going.
Your
is
Honor,
that correct?
It is not correct, Your Honor. Absolutely not. And during Mr. Eiler's cross-examination of Mr. Davidson, Mr. Davidson admitted on cross-examination that he, this idea of being feared for his life, he construed it after this incident had occurred. He was mad. He was not afraid.
Because of the prior theft the day
yes,
or two
Your Honor,
before?
Yes, Your Honor. That's an extremely important point. 3 days before this, Sergeant Barber of the police department was out at Mr. Davidson's property because there had been a break-in at the pole barn with some weed eaters and some grass that had been taken. At that time, Sergeant Barber had written a supplemental police report and had told Mr. Davidson specifically, and this was written in the report, that you cannot shoot at a clean trespasser. Because Mr. Davidson said, if those boys come back, I'm going to shoot.
Well, isn't the best evidence that Mr. Davidson said, you know, in answer to Justice Sweeney's question, that he said the reason he shot, albeit over their heads, to try to get them to stop so they could be arrested?
That's correct.
I mean, if the shots were fired out of fear that they were coming in the house, that's not consistent with that statement, is it?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's not. And the point is, even the evidence was that it was a locked home, that he had in fact called the police before he took out his gun. And he should have waited for the police to come. But the trial court did not rule on refuse to charge on self-defense and the court appeals agreed with that.
Just take your fact pattern a different route and we've got to take it to the PP Tom. Let's say they do break in the bar, they're successful, they come out, they have an armload of stuff, he yells, stop. They run with the armor and stuff. Does that change any of the duties toward them?
No, Your Honor, it does not.
So they just can sue on their negligence even though they run away from our armor.
That's correct.
What is your response to Mr. Birch's response to my waiver issue with him, that this was never a negligence case and that that was clear in the proceedings below, and that the waiver, therefore, the fact that they're in the waiver issue doesn't have much weight, therefore.
Well, Your Honor, because one thing we disagree on, and I disagree with the standard reply. I believe that in fact it was a negligence case. That's the standard of the law required that we prove. But you're correct as Mr. Arnold pointed out in the supplement, there was a discussion prior to the charge and after the charge to the jury, and trial counsel, Mr. Olson, specifically stated that he had no problem with and no objection to the law as stated in that being negligence. So it's incumbent upon him, according to Rule 51, for him to request that the jury be charged under willful wantonness and to object to the negligence charge. decide these cases where the defendant owes no duty to the plaintiff. In fact, here is proceeded certainly that the common law requires the defendant to exercise reasonable care. Certainly reasonable care to discharge the firearm, which he did not do. So I believe that the primary assumption of this argument is waived. Furthermore, the social implications of allowing that would just encourage vigilante to take the law into their own hands. It might discourage crime. It's very high pressure. You know, I mean, as we're a society, we're saying that grass seed is more important than the life of a 20-year-old boy than the next week's life. I think, to me, the most damning stat in this case is that Mr. Davidson was told he couldn't do, he couldn't shoot at those boys. So there was actually, the case doesn't involve a man who was confused and frightened about what he could do and what he couldn't do to protect himself. That the police officer was very specific in his report. And what he told, what Mr. Davidson told him, that I'm gonna, if those boys come back, I'm going to shoot them. And Sergeant Barber said, you can't do that. You can only shoot if your life is threatened. And certainly his life wasn't threatened, nor was his property. And to shoot at boys running away, certainly to shoot over their heads was certainly negligent and for these reasons. We would request that the this court reverse the ruling of the Court of Appeals and reinstate the jury verdict.
Thank you, Ms. Eiler. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.